Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. It's an interesting episode this week. Aaron O'Brien is gone. He's been double-dipped by the Red Angels again.
No!
And that's Holly Michelle. And we also have we've got Trek Yards with us. We've got Captain Foley and Commander Cockings.
Hello, everyone. I'm Captain Foley.
Evening. I'm 7 hours ahead of you all.
Yes, the time warp of the globe that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
So much like last year, we had Trek Yards on to kind of recap the season one of Discovery. Last year, we wanted to bring them back on to recap season two because I thought that was a great conversation of how we thought the seasons were as a whole. So we're kind of going to restart that conversation again. So season two, we had Michael dealing with the fallout of the Red Angel and then becoming the Red Angel herself. And it was a mishmash of stop and go as far as the story went. We'd stop, then we'd go, we'd stop, then we'd go, and then, oh, I'm the Red Angel. Then I'm not. Then I am. I am the Red Angel. So, and then we go 950 years into the future. And then season three is full of possibilities. Will they come back? We'll discuss.
Yeah, season two is, I think, a huge improvement over season one. I think they listened to the fans and kind of did some course corrections, which was nice to see. And hopefully we were part of that, you know, telling our thoughts on what should be improved. So that's the way I like to think of it anyway.
I mean,
where's your check then?
Yeah, exactly. Well, depending on who you talk to, we're shills for CBS. We either love the show or we absolutely hate it. People watching the same episode just can't make up their minds. So
It's hilarious. I don't think we've ever been called CBS shills. Most people say we're too negative. And I'm just like, well, you know, we give credit where credit's due, and we say you could improve that one. I mean, it's the same thing last year. I think you guys and us on the show are pretty similar-minded as far as like our take on the show.
Well, that's one of the nice things about season two is in season one, we called out, and me especially, the writing for just being really subpar in tons of ways. So it was nice to go into the season, say for the first four or five, be able to say, yeah, the writing's much better. It's pretty good. And then you look to the other problems, the story stuff. And because they're trying to be more ambitious this year and they failed in a lot of those ambitious ways, where season one's story was much simpler, while I had bigger plot holes, it might have had a more consistent quote unquote story. So it's interesting how the different problematic elements, yeah, the writing's better, you don't have to mention it. So we're shills for saying it's good, but now the plot suffers because they didn't think it through properly. Damn, we hate it and we're just, yeah, as you said, can't win. Just be honest, that's our goal.
Well, I'm hoping the reason we can't win is because you said the first five or four or five episodes are great, and the first four or five episodes...
We're
better. The first four episodes were better, then it fell apart after the writing fall apart.
It's the build-up. Anything can happen, any direction you're... The mystery was great in the season of what it could be, but the answers were all pretty poor, and a little bit rushed at the end, and it's just like, well... As I said, and I'll say it once more. Sorry, Stuart. If the setup can be great, but if the payoff's not good, the setup is now worse from hindsight. Whereas we were enjoying the setup and the questions, and then it's like, oh, okay then.
Is that all it was?
Yeah, all it was.
What's your biggest upset about the payoffs not working out this season? Because mine, honestly, was the thing that happened between Michael and Spock. The fact that it was just... That payoff was just so mundane. It just seemed like you've seen it in every little sitcom where two kids get in a fight and it's like, oh, they called them names. And that was like the big thing. And I was like, really? Name calling as children? That was the big thing you couldn't tell your mom and dad about? Really?
Yeah, I kind of saw that coming. When I saw that flashback, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I expected. And I actually, I'm not one for flashbacks, as Samuel will tell you. You know, first season of Arrow, I hated all the flashbacks to the island. Like, I just didn't care. It took me out of the story. But these ones worked for me because they were short. They were placed in the proper places in the episodes, and it wasn't focused on too heavily. So I kind of like the flashbacks for that. But yeah, the overarching plot points of first let's find Spock, and oh my god, then what's the Red Angel, and then all of a sudden we know who the Red Angel is, but what are all these, you know, the red signals? It's like the payoffs for each of them were kind of like, eh, okay, now we found Spock, whoopee, let's move to the next thing. It just wasn't, you know, there was so much potential there for really good storytelling, and it was kind of like, oh, there's the lazy answer. And this is kind of what it felt like.
Before the last two, which obviously is sort of its own little mini movie, the four before that, each episode, even the Talosian one, or the one before, I think the Talosian one, is pretty good and okay, but there's something at the end that hooks you, and the promise of the next week is what makes you excited, because like, yeah, that was a great ender. But the episode itself wasn't great. And then the next episode is the exact same thing, each time trying to pull you along, but without actually having the substance in the inside.
Honestly,
it would be fine if the end was amazing, but it's like, eh, it wasn't quite amazing.
Well, yeah, I think it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's honestly exactly how I felt about True Blood. All the episodes were mediocre, then they'd have a weird hook at the end. It's like, I got to keep watching, but it was just mediocrity all the way through. I'm like, but they always had that hook, and it was just the most bizarre.
It's like the first
thing.
Episode of Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones season, episode one, you're so confused, so full of information, and the end just hooks you. It's like, well, damn, I need to watch now, even though you're like, is it good? Yes? And then damn.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for that.
What about you, Holly?
I didn't have that experience with Game of Thrones, actually, because we accidentally watched episode 10 of season 1 first, because that's how Hulu
was
set up.
It was all flashbacks for you.
What?
So it was all flashbacks for you.
Well, it was like, it basically just went right into like a war council, I think. And then when we realized it and we went and watched season 1, we were like,
hasn't seen
what
it
the
yet,
hell? This is not even the same show.
Yeah. I haven't watched Game of Thrones yet.
But he will.
It's on the to watch list. Yeah,
right.
Well, might as well just wait for the season to be over. Then you have it all.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do usually, because I don't like having to wait. So yeah,
that's good. That's good. Good plan. So Holly, what were your kind of thoughts on the? What was one of your biggest letdowns of the season?
I mean, I didn't feel let down this season.
Miss positivity.
What do you think about season one as a general, so we know kind of where your like one line bio for that is, because obviously that can set where we think
season one. I watched season one after the fact, so I was able to like binge a couple of the episodes at a time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I felt like season one was kind of all over the place. And now that you guys are kind of saying that that's how this season was, I'm thinking back and I'm like, well, yeah, I guess it was kind of all over the place. But I was able to follow, like, train of thought wise, I was able to follow along and not feel like it was all over the place, except for during each episode when there were like five things going on.
Yeah.
That frustrated me. So, you know, what's a good example?
Well, you're thinking the thing with that is that this show's better to binge watch, because you kind of, it builds on each episode. It's not episodic per se. So not having to wait a week is probably a huge improvement as far as watching the whole thing goes.
Well, not just that, but the greatest advantage of Discovery is that you don't think about it. The end episode, and we got called out for this, we both enjoyed the last two episodes and last episode, even mm-hmm. though they got so many flaws, because it was a roller coaster. It was an enjoyable ride. As mm-hmm. soon as then, like, we would do analyze it, like, oh, but it works really well in that context. So I think for non-Trek fans, which is what the show is aimed at, people who can binge, which will be the rest of time, they'll just get on Netflix or whatever and just watch, it'll be like, oh, that was a good 12 episodes, and never touch it again, and not care if this didn't make sense or this, because you just watched all. And say, there we go. Oh, that's why that happened. Moving on. It's not one of those shows that has any depth or really rewatchability beyond maybe a second time, maybe. Which I'm excited to do, to be fair, but we have a different sort of context. Whereas a lot of shows, like Game of Thrones, we're watching it again for the new season, and there's so many little things and nuance, like, damn, that was there from the beginning. Yeah, Discovery just doesn't do that. It's not that sort of show.
I mean, maybe one day can do that if they keep the show writers consistent and don't have a major, like jumble like they did. Because I know the first season had, what, three major? Because we talked with Larry. He said there was three major, like, writers' room shakeups in the first season. And we know for a fact there was two in season two. So if they can keep show writers consistent in season three onward, it would be a beautiful thing. And the thing is, like, you know, TNG got better in season three. DS9 got better in season three.
But that doesn't give this show the right to do that. How many shows are good from season one? So why should this show be good at season three? Why are you throwing 100 million at people that can't write well and give them 100 million to get right when other shows can do it in one season, can do it in three episodes, can do it in one pilot?
I mean,
just because Trek did it in the past doesn't mean that was bad on them too.
I completely agree. I don't think it's fair that they're giving a subpar Trek for the first couple seasons because all the other seasons of Star Trek were subpar in the first two seasons. That's not fair. In a world where we have Game of Thrones and the other premium content shows, which are pretty good from season one on, I said this from the beginning before season one even came out. Star Trek Discovery needed to hit on all cylinders, and it didn't. Season one didn't when it could have, since it was all supposed to be about the Klingon War, but really it was about Lorca being from the Mirror Universe. It was a bait and switch. And at least this season, they were smart to not really give us anything to latch onto for season two, except for some vague statement about season two being about faith and Michael having faith versus science.
Well, yeah, I didn't even hear that. But
I didn't either.
Yeah, they dropped it in reshoots, you can tell. But Holly, what did you think of season two then?
I mean, I thought it was fine. I mean, I guess there's nothing that really stands out that's like epic, even though a lot, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was, like I said, it was frustrating when there were so many plots going on at once because it took away from other plots, you know? You'd just get into something or you'd just start working something through in your head and then they would go to something else and then you're like, okay, now I'm paying attention to this.
Mm.
But, I mean, that's really it. I've enjoyed it. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, the problem even with season two is they did change showrunners kind of midway through, and it got another kind of course correction. Not as bad as season one by any means. That was a lot more subtle than season two, but it was still evident, you know? And that's a problem. Like, they need to have a steady season of just the same showrunners would be great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. That's the biggest thing I want from season three is just the showrunners, not the changeover, the writer's room, not the changeover. Just a single, unified story, please, yeah. For the love of God.
And I can almost guarantee that the impetus to go into the future was, and I mean, Alex Kurtzman's talked about it specifically, I guarantee he was, once he came in and took over, he was the one that made that change. So they had to rewrite the end of the season to go for that. And so why does Leland and Control suddenly become this pitiful thing that loses all interest and power because we had to get to the future? How? Doesn't matter. Make it visually epic, which is just the VFX people. We have to get to the future. I guarantee the original arc, that was not, because that's such a random thing to do. You know, no other show would do that in Trek because it, you know, but let's do that. And now we can do season three.
Yeah,
they had to these breadcrumbs. They had to abandon stuff and kill people just to get there. You know, it was about the destination, not the journey. Whereas the first couple were about the journey. We didn't know the destination, and it's implying certain things. But again, now the end, we see the end. You can see that the journey doesn't quite connect to the end.
That's a perfect. That's an amazing point. I didn't think about it that way. And as you're saying that, it makes me think. That had to be the case where he wanted them to go into the future because when the showrunner changed hands to him, he probably just saw all the people bitching about all the canon inconsistencies, and they're like, well, we're going to just fuck it. And I feel like that's part of the reason why we probably won't really get a Captain Pike show is because they just unfucked themselves by moving Discovery into the future and not having to deal with canon issues and consistency.
But I know a lot of people want the Pike show, but as Robert Meyer Burnett said, a Pike show is just a carbon copy of TOS, but done with a writing staff that's proven to not understand the time periods. Like, do you really want to see just a visually updated TOS with Pike or another new show that's original and interesting? Yeah, the characters are good, but wouldn't you rather see it as a classical TOS but slightly more modern? I mean, it would be done the same sort of weird way as a concept, fine, but not as the way they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Do you want a Pike show? Do you really want a Pike show?
I mean, in theory, yes, but I don't think it'll pan out. And I kind of hope we don't get a Pike show because, I mean, I feel like they just kind of, like I said, they undid all the canon issues by moving Discovery into the future. But why would they make the trouble of making another show pick up where the season two left off in that same timeline? Which, I mean, I suppose Section 31 will be that unless Michelle Yeoh stays in the future, which I think is kind of interesting. What do you guys think about that, actually, with Michelle Yeoh and the Section 31 show? From what I've heard, they're talking about not doing Section 31 until after Season 3 wraps. Do you think Discovery's coming back to our timeline by the end of Season 3, or are they just going to send Michelle Yeoh back?
As I've said a few times, I think we have to tie in with Calypso somehow. We've tied into two of the other shorts, but there was no payoff for Calypso where essentially the ship was told to, you know, the crew will be back. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to find a way to get the crew back at some point. And if we can come back, we'll come back for Discovery. But then Discovery just sits there for 1,000 years waiting and becomes sentient.
Well, Discovery's only have to sit there for 50 years to become sentient because they've already jumped 950 years into the future.
No, Discovery said it was sitting for 1,000 years. It jumped 950 years in the future and then sat for another 1,000 years.
They forgot.
Well, no, I think that's just a misinterpretation. It's not 1,000 years in the future. It's been sitting for 1,000 years. So,
I mean, we assumed it was 1,000 years in the future from the present.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's more interesting to have it be in the year 4,000 because we were disappointed by the fact the Federation was destroyed. So make it 4,000. If you really want to go absurd, then okay, fine. 2,000 years in the future, it's gone. Although it could just be a one-off that they're never going to address again.
I mean, I was honestly not expecting them to tie into any of them except for the Saru one when they were first at them. I was surprised that they tied into the Tilly one. I was really hoping they were going to. I was kind of hoping they tie into the Mud one and that Ash Tyler would go find Harry Mud and bring Harry Mud's Harry Mud army. To the battle instead of the Klingons, because that would be a fun twist. But
that'd be awful.
Because they tied in the other ones, and I'm like, huh. Well, moving Discovery 950 years into the future sort of ties
into think about itself. It this way, though. They didn't tie them in, so I said, right, what money have we already spent on the shows? What can we make a separate thing on? We already have the village. We'll do something with that. It's very clever, and I called that at the time when they were coming out. It's just, what can we redress and make a little story of? And they did a good job for them.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about them because I didn't think they were going to tie in. And then the did made him a little bit better to me, but not by a lot. As far as season two going, improvements over season one instead of like maybe negative things, for me, one of the biggest improvements was you can freaking – and I know you guys are going to love this – you can freaking see the ships, for the love of God. Finally, we can see them and they look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What about you guys?
Oh yeah, that was one of our major complaints from season one because we're ship guys. Like, I love seeing the externals of the ships, and I missed the captain's log from TNG where you see the nice flyby of the ship and captain's log. Stardate didn't get much of that in season one. There was like one or two episodes where you kind of got a few shots like that, but they were so poorly lit. And season two definitely stepped up the visual effects game, and the overall views of the ship were fantastic. I just wish they'd close the damn shuttle bay doors.
And not show the weird roller coaster turbo lift thing.
Oh, good God. Don't get me started on that.
Oh, I'd love to get started on that because that peeves me to no end.
People know my thoughts about the ships, but I want to know what Holly thinks in the comparison of the CGI between season one and season two. Did you notice a difference? Like, if you've watched them more recently, what was sort of your thought on the difference and or better, worse?
I haven't rewatched season one, so I can't tell you. But from what I remember, was it mostly everything inside, like in the ships, not really outside of the ships for season one?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of externals of the ships, really.
Yeah.
There was a Pavo episode and a few episodes that kind of did some nice stuff, but overall it was just severely lacking in that regard.
Oh.
But brightness does help. It's not rocket science. You know, yeah. I think that
applies to the writer's room too. Brightness helps, guys. Get some bright people in there.
But it was a symbol of them not being proud of what they've got. They had to do it in darkness. You know, I've talked to one of the people that actually pretty much, you know, within a team of three people produced the San Diego Comic-Con trailer, the original one with the Discovery Alpha. And they were saying, you know, we had to make this design, and the reason you only see it for those three shots because we couldn't find any good angles. It's like we had to hide it. We had to light it poorly because literally we couldn't. We were struggling to make it look good. And so why was every ship in darkness in season one? Well, partially probably because the people who lighted them were like, oh, God, let's just do contrast, up the contrast, and over the blacks. Oh, it's cinematic now. And it's like, yeah. But it was better in season two.
I definitely remember more from season two than season one, so I didn't remark on it, but now that you say it, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I really enjoyed about season two was some of those episodes near the beginning, but sort of in the middle, felt way more episodic. You know, they were very self-contained. They were kind of bookended with the let's find Spock storyline at the beginning. And then at the end, oh, we got a clue for Spock. But in between, there was a nice episodic vibe, which I kind of miss from Star Trek. But that's what I kind of goes back to what I referred to earlier, is if you can binge watch the season without having to wait, I'm sure it's much more enjoyable ride, because Samuel and myself did go back and watch season one again before season two started. And knowing what is coming up is also helpful, because you put things together that you didn't really notice before. So I kind of enjoyed the more episodic nature of some of the episodes, but it kind of lost it near the end of the season. As far as that goes, it just started becoming this big, you know, long story that forgets what they did in the last episode. A lot of unanswered questions, things that go nowhere. It's just kind of like, really? I mean, even a line of dialogue would have solved some of those problems. But that being said, a single line of dialogue inserted to explain some of the issues from season one was also kind of annoying to me. Like, oh, you have hair now. Oh, that's because the war is over. Ha, ha, ha. Let's move along. You know, stupid things like that.
I hated that, because it's just like, well, what about all the Klingons? Well, none of them had hair before the war started, because he got on the Skype call with everybody and they were all bald.
Yeah, well, they'd always be bald, because they're always at war with somebody, probably.
I guess.
It's a classic, we think we're smart answer, / damn, we're in a corner, what have we got, that. And it's like, well, it's something.
It's just, I feel like all their course corrections, well, I was kind of glad they made some of them. I'm glad they gave the Klingons hair. I wish they just didn't say that. It would have been better if they had not said some things. And then, you know, they were kind of heavy-handed with Pike's like, oh, if we get number one for like 5 minutes just to say, oh, look, she's going to have a cheeseburger, and tell her to rip out all the hologram communications, because we never saw them in TOS. So, yeah. I mean, I don't, it felt they were kind of heavy handed. Like, why did, maybe they just didn't want to use the holograms. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not like the ship looks the same on the inside anyway. I mean, why go through the trouble of taking that away? Like,
well, as we've said often, as soon as they say it's a full visual reboot that isn't intended to connect to the original canon, everything is fine. Doesn't make it great, but everything's fine. It's not rocket science, and you know, as we always say, we kind of judge them by the standards they give themselves.
And, absolutely.
You know, their judgment based on that is
I mean, like, if they would have said this is a visual reboot, but the canon is the same, just like, that would be fine. But when they say it's, like, perfect and they're not committing one way or the other, it is frustrating. I do agree with that. And Holly thinks I complain a lot about it. And I'm like you guys. I hold them to the standards of which they keep saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that's one of the things we said all along. If they just come out from season one and say, oh, this is a visual reboot of the TOS era, we would have been like, you guys are doing great. Got a few little, you know, complaints. It wouldn't be... because we like to explain things in universe, and because this is such a period piece, you know, when they revisited in Deep Space Nine and TNG and all the other series, Enterprise and A Mirror Darkly, they always were very careful about how they recreated it and really made sure it looked like it was supposed to. You know, and then, you know, if they had said from the beginning, oh, this is like, just like JJ, it's its own universe, it's a visual reboot, we would have been like, you guys are doing great. There's a few little issues we might have, but overall, you're doing fantastic. Or even if they had put it post-Nemesis, again, everything would have worked for me. The Klingons looking different, the ships looking the way they did.
The Klingons fearing homogenization.
Yes.
Everything season one would make way more sense, but I feel like go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was about to jump off that. I mean, I've talked about that often. The Klingons, yeah, it makes no sense them wanting to stay pure and non-part of the Federation if you hadn't talked to them for 70 years, which you set up in the same episode. It's like, there's no reason for any of those tensions. There's no possible reason they'd feel that way. Whereas in post-Nemesis, you've now had treaties for 100 years. Some radical will come out of the woodwork. I buy that 100%.
And after the Dominion War, yeah, like the alliance with everybody, even the kind of Romulans, I could see a sect of Klingons going, hey, we don't want to be just thrown in with all these others.
You know? And after homogenizing with, you know, they create another augment virus deliberately, which changes their appearance to look more, you know, anti-human, more powerful, ups their physical strength by 80%, and now they're even more fierce warriors, but it makes them way more, you know, emotional and more radicalized as, you know, aggressive. And now you've got a cool subset of Klingons, and that's all ones you see because they're the warring ones. Cool. Good new storyline.
That would have been fantastic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing. Discovery's missed opportunity rather than bad show. It's sad, but it's true. It could have been so much more, and it should have been so much more. It's not rocket science.
You guys are absolutely right. And the thing is, like, I love your guys' channel, honestly, but I hate watching it sometimes because the ideas you guys come up with are just way better than what the show is going to be. So I feel even more disappointed watching Discovery. Because, like, I was watching some of your episodes, like around towards the end of the season one. I'm like, oh, because I tried for the most part to not let other people's opinions judge cloud my opinion for when we podcast on the episode. So I avoided most of your episodes. But toward the end, I was like, oh, what are you guys talking about? And you guys had just great ideas. And I'm just like, I hate watching Trek Yards because you're going to kill – it's the story in Star Trek Discovery is not going to be as good as you guys are saying.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've been having some musings, and Stuart doesn't know this yet, but I tried to do a full 14-episode rewrite of the season as in full shooting scripts because I've been in the gym this week. And that's, you know, a lot of hours on the treadmill. I literally worked out how to make the first, like, four episodes just sing and be way better and a better closing as well. And I just think, with the basis of the storyline, you can make some good stuff, but by just shifting some things around, changing characters, you can make the season really good, and it wouldn't be difficult with what's there. I'm tempted to just go ahead and write a full 14-episode season.
That I would love to see this and hear about that, because, I mean, you guys have great ideas, and I love hearing what you guys have to say. And I mostly just say it in jest that I hate watching. It's just because you guys, the ideas you've got versus what happens on screen is, like, night and day different.
Well, thank you, I guess, that we turn you off of our show because we're so brilliant.
No. It's turning him
off of Discovery is what it's doing.
It's turning me off of Discovery, yeah. That's more what it's doing.
As long as we're turning you on to Trek Yards.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to go binge. I'm going to have to go binge the old episodes of Trek Yards now that the season's over. But, yeah, I really enjoy you guys talking Star Trek, and I was like, oh, such good ideas. I was like, oh, it's such a shame. Same thing with, like, the Red Letter Media. When they did their treatment for the Picard show, I'm like, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
And the show's going to be not nearly this good.
Yeah. We actually did a video about that, and, yeah, Samuel did a lot of good renders of the USS Galaxy.
Oh, that's great.
I hope they'd see it and be like, damn, Trek Yards, because we're in that video, which is awesome. But just from a YouTube search, but it would have been cool if they'd like. I just like Mike's the class, and it would be cool to have him on the show because he never gets to vent, and when he does, they make fun of him. So we're the place to vent, Mike.
Mike, come on, send the holics too. I'd love to listen to Mike vent on my show. That'd be amazing. My coworker and I watched a lot of Red Letter Media at work.
They've threatened to do a season two final video, so I'm excited for that to come out, and it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hope so, because the last time they did one, they said they weren't going to do one.
Yeah, I've been literally the last video, like, ugh.
We're done. Yeah, it's great.
I'll never be done.
No, Mike likes Star Trek too much to not complain about it. So I know, Stuart, a little while ago you were talking about how, like, the couple first episodes felt more episodic, and I liked that to a point, but I felt like them being more self-contained slowed down the overall point of the show. because like we said, I believe Samuel said earlier near the beginning of the show, is that just like it felt rushed at the end. And I completely agree with the show feeling rushed at the end, because season one had the same issue where they just had to tie everything up in like two episodes. And then the second to last episode, they didn't do anything. They just kind of like talked for an hour and did make a plan. They regrew their spores that they destroyed that they didn't have to destroy.
But they never talked about it again, yeah.
Never talked about it again, yeah. It's just so – they just – some of the decisions in the writing just make me go, why? You basically wrote yourself into a corner, so you had to waste an episode on writing yourself out of the corner. It just the writing seems to do that. And I felt like one of the big takeaway – one of the big wastes of times – there's two big wastes of times this season. They took way too long to find Spock. And I felt like the couple episodes dealing with Tilly's spore, which ended up bringing Culber back, also took away from the season. Because that didn't really pan out in the overall story for any major importance, other than that love finds a way, I guess? Life finds a way. I don't know.
Yeah, the Tilly thing was kind of iffy for me. And I love Tilly. Like, I'll be the first to admit that. So any Tilly episode. I love Tilly, too. But yeah, even the short runaway was just my least favorite. I watched it once, and I just didn't care to watch it again. So when it finally tied in with something, I'm like, I should probably go back and revisit that. But I mean, they talked about damaging the spore network, but apparently that was Hugh that was damaging the spore network every time they jumped. So jumping later was fine. It's kind of vague. A lot of people complained about why are they jumping if you know it's damaging the mycelial network. But no, it was because Hugh was there. They just didn't answer their own questions, really.
They basically had fans being angry at Culber getting killed. And then they were like, oh, crap, we've got to react to that. And the costumes and all these things. But to get him back, we may have vaguely had a slight plan with the spore. But we definitely didn't know how it was going to pay off. Oh, let's do this. But obviously it takes several episodes to pay off. And Tilly's got to be a major character for those, which doesn't quite fit a major character role, and that unbalances the rest of the show. And then you can't have him doing just mismanaged again.
And then after that little arc, we lose Tilly completely almost. She just pops up here and there, and it's just like, what happened?
Well, you hear people complaining, Tilly, I hate the way she's acting, and her acting, like the character's idiosyncrasies are kind of. You know, they change from episode to episode, unfortunately. It's like she's almost schizophrenic and has different personalities. But, yeah, a lot of people will complain about Tilly's whole approach to things. Oh, what's that?
I don't see that in Tilly at all.
Yeah, well, I don't either. I really like her character. I think she's kind of cute the way she acts. But a lot of people are very anti-Tilly. Like, anytime she's on screen, I'm just so annoyed. It's like, really? I disagree.
I do. What do you think? What do you think then, Holly, about the development and or not thereof, or the too much, too little through the season?
It's hard for me to, agree with a lot of what you guys are saying, because I don't really peek behind the curtain, so I'm able to just kind of accept the information that's given to me rather than become frustrated with the information that's given to me that's wrong. So as far as, granted, I definitely agree that it felt like we were going nowhere with a few episodes. We still have, as was mentioned earlier, we still have some shorts that need to be explained throughout Discovery's run. So, Culber coming back could be essential to whatever they're doing in the future. And that's from a perspective of I'm not looking at the, writing changes. I'm just, making sense of it. So I don't know. I don't know. It's hard for me to kind of agree with a lot of what you guys are saying, though.
So. Well, I wasn't talking from a behind-the-scenes perspective. I was just talking about just the flow of the season. I just felt like the Tilly thing and the Culber thing just slowed everything down. And then them taking so long to find Spock also slowed things down. Because I feel like the Red Angel was the mystery, and they took so long to get to the mystery that they didn't have enough time to explain it.
Well, it doubles down they had so many big potential themes. They invented a time travel suit which can create wormholes to any part of the galaxy and time instantly. The power source that is anywhere in the galaxy that you can get to, because they said that one happens every second, and it has no side effects beyond the first one, but then Burnham uses it, no problem. So it's just the beta test version is fine. And they create an AI pre-AI, which has enough power to take over Section 31 ships, which should be more powerful, and it, all these things, and it kills all life in the galaxy, in the future. These are amazingly big themes, you know? Mm-hmm. And what do we get? We get all these side stories, and then at the end, Control is little more than just the villain that attacks you, and the Red Angel is little more than just it works. I mean, whereas every other little story, it took away from what all you needed was two storylines and character bits. You know, people always say, we kind of said season one had very few character moments. You didn't get to know the people. Had more this season, but they're really badly balanced. You don't have one episode before the battle with 100% character and then nothing in the other episode because, yes, one feels slow, one feels absent.
Mm-hmm.
But you had them, you just had to meld them better and have a more intricate battle. And early on, Tilly stuff maybe balance out through the whole season. That would be more interesting rather than just too much character then no character. It's another balanced thing.
Yeah. And I think I even mentioned something similar on the Synthaholics when we got to, like, I don't know, episode 9, and I was like, well, it seems like Tilly's whole purpose for this season is ended, because nothing had happened in, like, 3 or 4 episodes with
her. Well, same as Stamets.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. His role has ended in season 1, except when they need to spore. Yeah. And Kolber's only role is to be with Stamets, who everyone's sort of redundant unless they're not.
Yeah, they tried to make that relationship so dramatic, you know, like, oh, I'm not getting back together, I'm a different person. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's fine. Let's get it back together at the end, which I love that whole them getting back together because I enjoy both characters, but it just seems so forced again. It's like
everybody was
complaining they weren't going to get back together after coming back to life. So I don't know.
I just appreciate the, you know, Star Trek's always touched on such important situations in the world, and PTSD is a pretty big one right now. And I mean, obviously also gay marriage and equality, but you know, with them, I think it was entertaining and important to portray, but yeah, I don't know if it was needed because it did feel like we were treading water for a while.
Well, and you're right there about PTSD. That's a great, I mean, his acting was excellent after that moment. He did a great job. And in terms of the gay marriage, the best way of showing positivity for gayness is not to make a thing of it. And they did that perfectly.
Right.
No one ever mentions them as a couple. I mean, they should have been married or not married. You know, so, who knows what they are? They're together, but
you know, they never explain it per se. Like,
it would have been nice to have just a formal husband, but I guess that'd make it complicated when you're, you know, killed and brought back to life. Hey, new vows because you died. But
right.
It would have been nice if then, I think I must have said this to you, Stuart, but now, you know, he was in the mycelial network. He's been brought back via that layer of energy. And Stamets is now connected to that layer of energy from season one. It'd be nice if that gave maybe Hugh the same time sort of seeable powers, and that could be useful for the time crystal, and then him and Hugh, Stamets could work together. So you create this narrative, which now at the end of the season comes to fruition. They give them character moments at the end, and one of the things I would have done in season two if I had written it was make the time suit be spore based, because you've already given the universe an infinite fuel, infinite space, infinite time creation. Why are you making a second one? And if it was all spore based, guess what? Stamets now can see spore stuff. Hugh can now see spore stuff, and it all integrates. And everyone has a point in the story and a payoff at the end from coming back.
That's what I kept. That would have been great. That's what I kept waiting for. I kept waiting for Hugh to be central to the story, to do something important, and he never did.
Maybe that's how they get back, and they abandon Discovery.
Well, the problem is they don't know what season 3 is going to be. They have no idea what they're going to do. And so they can retcon their own stuff, but
well, there's lots of potential there with Stamets having the tardigrade DNA and being able to navigate the network, but being 950 years in the future might be complex. But since, you know, Hugh's already been in the mycelial network for so long and has a special connection to it, perhaps the two of them working together in the spore chamber somehow linked up will be able to try to get the ship back. Doesn't really work.
But,
you know, there's a lot of potential there for storytelling.
It's going to be Michael Burnham that does
it.
I know.
Because it's the Michael Burnham show.
I'm trying to be optimistic.
We did that every episode, Stuart.
It's the Michael Burnham show. She does everything because she's the main character for some reason.
Just to note, she still has a fully functional time suit at the end of the episode in the future because she goes back. Because, you know, she's in the future. She goes into the 3 months ahead of the present that she leaves to tell Spock she's fine. So right. She has a fully functional time suit in the future. I doubt that was her last jump, given that we also see a red signal at the end of the end. And there's still five red signals to, or seven technically, to start as well. So she has a...
Well, they'll probably just...
Unless she dialed that in before she actually went through. Or, you know what I mean? When she was staying there on the rock, like, actually putting in the coordinates for everything, she could have dialed it in beforehand.
Well, another seven...
Well, it's all out of time, so...
Yeah.
Out of order.
Should have said that, though, because...
Oh, yeah, we'll explain it in season three at some point. Oh, yeah, by the way. Oh, I mean, flashback to this scene. This is what I was doing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's how Discovery is gonna roll. They're gonna have to flashback or use a lot of stuff in the previous seasons to explain stuff that happened in future seasons to explain stuff that happened in the previous seasons, because they're so bad at explaining what's going on. You just kind of take it for granted. And I mean, like, what happened to the spores putting Stamets in a coma? Like, Stamets has been completely fine ever since that plot point, and it's never been touched on ever again.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the TNG, you know, warping through space is causing damage into the subspace layer. And it's mentioned like twice, maybe, after that. But they're always breaking the rules as far as that goes as well. So.
Oh, yeah. When you write yourselves into a corner, sometimes it's good to ignore it.
True.
Well, that happens a lot in Discovery. Let's see. So... Those points are a waste of time. Like, what I would have liked to have seen, like, instead of bringing Hugh back, I think it would have been nice to see Stamets move on and have some kind of other romance, like, just be sprinkled in throughout seasons, and maybe after season five or six, he's ended up with somebody else. That way you're not devoting entire episodes or, like, half of episodes to the romance. And that way it could still be there and it could be acknowledged and it could happen. It's just, you know, since nothing plot-heavy happened with Culber in this one to really... warrant bringing him back, it just felt like a waste of time to me.
And now aren't you just forcing Stamets to have plot by making him the love interest character? Also, I mean, seriously, is that what what's the point? I mean, he's now the get with people character. Really? He's a mycelial genius that's in a universe. It's like, no.
I don't think he needs to be with anyone.
I mean, yeah. but I mean, if they're gonna play the equality card and have to show it with a character, then
it doesn't matter. And all sentient life in the galaxy will be destroyed. Did you hear them say that? Sentient life.
Not once.
All sentient life.
But in the future, he definitely has a purpose. He's gonna be plugged into the engine. So he can spore jump. They don't have to worry about that in the future.
Well, I think they're gonna try to spore jump home or something, and it's gonna go terribly wrong somehow. I don't know.
Probably.
They'll all be somehow fused together.
I can't wait. It's gonna go wrong, then Michael will inject herself with some tardigrade DNA, and then she'll do it and it'll work.
Well, that's a whole episode on itself of us talking about what could happen in season three. Samuel, there's a good live for us to do.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys really enjoyed?
Pike.
Pike I think brought, that's a unison, everyone.
Yeah, Pike brought up something really great to this season, and Anson Mount just did a fantastic job. It was good getting that character fleshed out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely one of my favorite things about season two addition of Pike.
And also, clearly the best actor on the show, which is weird because he's not the oldest or most experienced necessarily, but he walks in and it's like, damn, he's acting out everybody.
Right.
Instantly. Which is sad. But he did.
He was excellent, and he by far was my favorite part about season two. And Lorca was my favorite part about season one. Like, they are nailing it with the captains. All the shortcomings that have happened in Discovery, writing and whatnot, somehow the captain magic has been great for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I really loved Lorca, even though Samuel hated him. Well, he didn't hate him. He just didn't like the character. I love Lorca. I want to see more Lorca.
Me too. I was really wanting to see Lorca come back in season two.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a great final shot, seeing him walk onto the bridge of the Discovery, last thing you see.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Reno. She was my favorite.
She was my second favorite of the season. By far.
Yeah,
she grew on me, but she needed an actual role. She was another character that was kind of like there. I mean, the thing is, Stamets is not a great engineer. Not really. He doesn't fix anything besides his little bit of whatever. Jet Reno should have been in every engineering scene because she's a clearly qualified person. Give her a lot of those scenes, and chemistry-wise, actually works better than Stamets in general. You know, when given natural lines, like Tilly, when given stuff that fits the character and the position and the quirk, does tremendously well. But then why is she not there for five episodes? Why is she not in these scenes where clearly engineers important, like on the planet when they get Michael's mum? Why the hell is Stamets doing the stuff with the science? This is not his field.
He's the mushroom guy.
Yeah, he's not qualified for this. Please, let Reno do it.
Well,
chief engineer. The person was hired to be the chief engineer of Discovery and hasn't been killed or fired, probably. Well, get them doing it. Alien, do it.
I mean, it's a super legitimate point, and I felt like, you know, a lot of with the writing, and they kind of wrote themselves into a corner with a guy whose specialty is mushrooms, and then especially since it's a thing that's not consistent with canon, so they have to phase it out some way. But moving them to the future means they don't have to phase it out, so he is free to keep being the navigation for the ship.
He said, what did I like? I brought my list from our episode because I honestly haven't thought about Discovery in a couple of weeks. Blue phasers, the Spock classic at the end, the Enterprise bridge, D7 saves the day, Enterprise in dry dock, San Francisco, the Section of One ships, wormholes, and truly one shot that's actually a battle shot. All the rest of them are not battle shots. That's all my top 10 of favorite things.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, I mirror most of those. I mean, I didn't actually make a list for my favorite, as anyone will remember. But yeah, there was a lot of good. And seeing some of the good old callbacks, like the blue phasers, was something really subtle, but yet so important. You know?
So great to see the phasers shooting blue and being long beams instead of just like little pew-pews.
Pulse phasers, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's weird that we give them credit for that. And as we say in Trek Gods occasionally, it's kind of Stockholm Syndrome. They've lulled us into, of course they won't do the correct canon thing. Of course they won't do the right sound effects. Of course they won't do the right weapons. Oh, they did the right weapons.
Yay.
Like, well, no, of course Enterprise fires blue phasers. There's no credit for that. Of course it does. There's nothing else in the explanation. But it's weird because they get credit for it, even though it's, you know, one of the weird, when they did Intermarrow Darkly, they obviously didn't, they didn't get credit for doing blue phasers, but they got credit for aft torpedoes. Everyone's confused, but it's still awesome. To something new, but it's still awesome. It's like, of course they do everything right, but they also do something extra. Discovery's just kind of like, of course you should do that.
I love the Stockholm. And I believe you said the exact same thing last year. Like, every time they did something right, it's like we just fall over and praise because of so many things that were wrong. I think your example last year was the Enterprise references.
Yeah,
because it's like, ooh, they mentioned something in canon, yay!
But yeah, they should. It's canon. Yeah.
Even then, you know, even then, like the Discovery from, you know, the future kind of went back in time to the Mirror Universe, and the wireframe of it looked all wrong. And Giorgio should know what the Bridge of a Constitution class looks like, but when she walks on the Enterprise, she's like, "Oh, orange." Wow, even though it wasn't orange, but that's a whole other topic.
I didn't realize that, but yeah, she's probably walked on the Defiant.
Yeah,
was on the Defiant or seen pictures and definitely knew about it. So I mean,
It still existed.
It was classified.
They go there.
So the Emperor
she was the Emperor, for Christ's sakes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was.
They could have had different color choices in the Mirror Universe.
Maybe she painted it her favorite color, which was not orange. That we don't know.
Well, you got to think too. It was like 80 years beforehand.
Yeah,
but you would think every new emperor would do ultimate research. And as someone else pointed out in our comments, because Discovery takes place still before the Defiant went back, she knows every event that happens in the prime timeline if she's researched in the databank. So that's all the past.
Mm-hmm.
You would assume if you're the Emperor of the Mirror Universe, you've seen a universe that has, you know, all this cool stuff. You would at least do light reading every night. Oh, what happened to the Andorians? I could use to annihilate them here. Oh, it's a page turner. We can kill them with gas. Nice.
Unless Empress Hoshi Sato, you know, deleted everything or, you know, classified it for herself and just over the 80 years kind of got lost and, you know, some details are passed down, but not all.
Well, that's called clever writing.
I know, and they don't do that. I understand. This is why he doesn't like watching Trek Yards, because we're better than them.
And we would work for free on their show if they just asked.
We would love to, yeah.
Right?
Hell, I'd work for free. I would just like to be a canon consultant and just being like, oh, no, you can't do that because it doesn't align with this. I mean, I can let them write their stories. I just want to course correct them. Just give them yay or nays on like what you can and cannot do.
Give us the script and we'll just put a little bit of red marks on it going, this is wrong. And
but this
put
is
a little solution
when,
at the bottom.
This is the problem with the corner they put themselves in, because we're now so used to all of the visual canon problems, which is pretty much the entire show. They're not doing too bad with like internal canon stuff, but it's surrounded by all the visual canon stuff. I mean, of course there aren't nanites that can take over a human created by an AI, created by Section Day One 10 years before Kirk. But there is. Like, the tech stuff still completely breaks it, but it's still a secret, and therefore it fits into technical canon? I mean, yes?
I feel like nanites were even new in Next Gen, sort of. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember Wesley's had his class nanites that messed up the Enterprise-D.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, the unfortunate thing with Discovery is they're working on the assumption that it's the future from our present, which it isn't. It's the future of the 1960s.
Yeah.
Which they don't carry over to Discovery. They're like, oh, well, I mean, we have nanites now. Literally, they're starting to develop them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For surgery and stuff. And it's like, well, of course we'll have nanites then, so let's throw those in. No, that's not how it works. I know that Star Trek is supposed to, you know, be that optimistic view of the future and kind of push things forward, and I get that. But as Doug Drexler and other people say, it is a period piece, and it is literally the future of the 60s, not our future. So they need to respect that when they do in canon stuff and in prime timeline stuff, not reimagined stuff.
And that's not to say we want the exact, you know, plywood, no metallic spray cardboard sets, as they say. No,
and they get no AC.
You know, it honestly, there are so many. I mean, the fact that the Avenger films have taken comic book characters with their basically the same costumes, a lot of them from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and modernized them, and no one even bats an eyelid on so many things and look great. It's just the person you hire, a good artist with the right brief. Look at the D7s, they look great, no complaints. That's a modernized 60s concept.
With the season 1 D7s or the season 2 D7s?
Shush your face. You know what I'm talking about.
There are no season 1 D7s. Even though they're called that.
Really? Were there none? I thought I heard them say specifically.
No, they did say it. Yes, they did. He's but playing. I'm just saying.
You know, I'm just being difficult. I'm just playing.
That's a first, man.
I know, right? Yeah, Stuart, you've talked with us more. You know me better than that.
But that is one of the best positives. That D7 is just great. I mean,
it's
you can't fault it.
Although I love the story behind it. It's like, okay, Vok, the torchbearer, he made it. Oh, we killed him because he was a traitor to the Empire. Let's keep his ship design anyway. Wouldn't you like throw out his design because like, oh,
well,
he was a traitor.
He was just a supervisor. I'm sure he didn't. He's not that smart. Have you met him?
I mean, later at the end, it's like, oh, this guy, decapitated, is now back, and he takes the Chancellor and a couple ships with him. What?
I mean,
the Chancellor's lying to us this whole time? Wow, we're going to dethrone her.
I got
Tyler,
better.
Before Tyler was, like, whatever, fused with Volk, wasn't he a pilot? Isn't that what he was before?
They did mention his piloting skills in season 1, but
so was Michael Burnham a test pilot, and so was Pike a test pilot. So I don't think it's necessarily a rare skill. And remember, he wasn't fused with; they recreated the guy's memories based on scans and stuff. So it's still a fake persona. So I doubt he got all of his abilities based, you know, on pure memory engrams. He does, you know, Vox abilities.
Just
the without
knowledge.
The two hearts.
Just the knowledge, you know, to be able to blend with what he, you know, what Ash Tyler knew and, you know, what the Klingons could use. I mean, that's useful stuff.
We're certainly out of the box thinking. I'll give you that. But it's like Khan in Into Darkness. There's no way he designs a future ship that can beat everybody with technology that's 200 years out of date. But he can think out of the box and let the designers think of a new perspective. They just wrongly said that in the script. It's just like, be smarter with your choice of dialogue.
Yeah,
they're not paid to be smart. They're paid to get. They're paid to put out schlock.
Paid to get paid. Is that all you're gonna say?
Paid to get paid.
Paid to get paid. Yes, I was gonna say that because that's about how the writing goes. They just paid to get paid.
Well, I want to know, you know, season one ended on so many interesting cliffhangers, and one of which being the Tyler Vok, Laurel, Klingon, you know, we had sort of strong Klingon influence in season one. It was the side story. So what did you two, obviously I know what Stuart thinks, what did you guys think of the Klingons, Tyler Vok, the payoff of this epic Klingon story with Laurel and him, and they've sent interviews, oh, we're going to have great answers and complicatedness, and obviously I'm playing here because I had none of that, but what did you think of the that whole storyline from all 14 episodes?
There was a Klingon storyline?
I thought it was okay. Obviously, the child played a big part in getting the time crystal. So it was necessary. But I still... I know Dave and Aaron hate Tyler.
Was Tyler in this season?
Well, but, more than Laurel, which was nice, because I hated episode 3 with the Klingon thing. It didn't work for me. But
I liked it.
What are you referring to?
Episode 3, where it was mostly a Klingon episode.
With like the decapitated baby head?
Yes. The decapitated head episode.
Yeah. I mean, that episode wasn't terrible, in my opinion, but I'm not, you know, a seasoned... seen every episode of Star Trek kind of person. but I didn't like, you know, what I don't like what they're doing with Ash is that they are just letting him continue to hold on to both of his little, humanity is not the right word, his human side and his Klingon side. So like, I was like, yay, he brought, you know, Laurel and the Klingons to this battle, but then he spoke Klingon and I was like, could you just stop already? They don't like you. Like, they don't want you to speak their language.
At least it sounded more like Klingon.
And, like, she supposedly killed him. So what are the Klingons going to think now? I just thought of that.
Yeah, well, that's what I mentioned just a few minutes ago. I mean, yeah, our chancellor who decapitated this guy who, what? Wait a minute, he's back? Oh, he needs our help. Yeah. Okay, well, she lied to us. Maybe she shouldn't be in power.
Yeah. Well, what would Vok do? He'd just shoot them all. I mean, where's the question? He just kills them. Cold blood.
I just can't wait for Ash Tyler to get a concussion so bad that Vok wakes back up.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just want Vok back because I always thought it was dumb that Laurel like killed the Vok part of him.
It was too easy.
Though that was
it
just didn't make any sense. Like none of the stuff that really happens like makes a ton of sense. Why would you kill the real consciousness and not the the construct? Like so much stuff is just with him. I just don't really care for it because it's not the actor's fault, but I just feel bad that they can't write a story.
It was also weird that the potential again of that duality, all we really got was he spends a few weeks on Kronos, he gets thrown out, then he becomes such a 31 fully human guy for 13 episodes. That's it. I mean, there's nothing there.
And then
there.
He becomes head of Section 31.
Yeah.
A Klingon.
I didn't get that he was, you know, quote-unquote fully human guy.
Well, but the Klingon side is so subdued. I mean, you put him next to other actors in those episodes, you weren't thinking, he's really got a suppressed Klingon half side where he's genetically turned. Like, that arc was ended. They could have used that. They could have made it really interesting. They just said, well, damn, we've got this character...
I mean, if Culber could have hit Ash hard enough to bring the Vok out in their fight, that could have been
like the Hulk.
Yeah, he could be the Hulk. Like if they could have done, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. I mean, like they could do some really fun stuff, but they didn't.
I mean, the way I was picturing it was like when you wake up in the morning and you feel a certain way, but you see yourself in the mirror and you look completely different than the person you feel you are. That molds you, and that's not, I mean, apparently that's a thing, like the Klingons do this all the time where they do these sleeper agent things, but I don't know, but
it was the first, so
it just, it will be, you know, it's hard. Yeah, well, it just, I bought it.
It's hard waking up with two penises.
Oh god.
He lost a lot of stuff in that surgery. Two hearts, two penises, just all the things.
Well, maybe they didn't realize humans only had one. Maybe he still had two. And then Michael doesn't question it because she's too logical to have had sex before.
Let's be real here, David. They would not have put two penises on a human.
They didn't. He was Klingon. They made a Klingon
in a human body. He had to be completely viable.
Yeah.
They had to buy that he was human. We'll fight you.
Fight me.
From California.
Do it. Do it now. So what, going forward with Discovery, I know we said earlier that could be an entire episode unto itself, but do you think that the Federation's still going to be existing in the future? Or is it going to be Mad Max in space? And if it's Mad Max in space, well, do you think they're going to get a ton of flack for not following Gene's, you know, bright future if all of a sudden the future is way worse?
Sorry.
I really haven't thought about it.
Well, that's what I mean. I would love to do a live talking about the possibilities for season three, because there's so many that open up. Yeah. I know that apparently there's going to be a whole new threat that they need to deal with, so who knows? But I have a feeling that, yeah, the Federation has fallen by that point, and it's up to the Discovery to save the day.
Well, remember, they're in the Beta Quadrant. Now, yes, they've got unlimited spores, although, to be fair, the spores they had don't, you know, who's to say they can actually make a new spore planet? Why would they keep the resources on them if they're trying to not do spore drive? So I can buy, they only have like 8 jumps left, 10 jumps left. That's a good thing to have. They still have the time suit.
Just like Voyager had a few torpedoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Plot torpedoes. But they're in a different quadrant, so I would love to see, just simply, like a Voyager, they're just too far from Federation space. Don't give us the answer, because these writers gave us, unfortunately, they ruined, you know, 70 years where we didn't see the Klingons. How many stories could you have told that they just ruined by not having that? You know, how many cool things could have happened by just throwing it in that didn't even mean anything? And so if now they said in the future, Federation's gone, the Borg have taken over everything, all these like 9 things, we're like, oh, well, that is now the future canon. What a shame. All the possibilities are gone. That's it. So I'd rather they stay in the Beta Quadrant, go very macro, go super, like, this is one small ship. It is a small, well, it's a huge ship, but one small crew, because not everyone stayed over. It's probably less than 80 people, 70 people on that ship. Mm. There wouldn't be any more. I mean, really only the bridge crew should have stayed. It's weird that so many chose to be with Michael, despite it being Michael, and give all their families away. So that it should just be, the radiation from the wormhole damaged our communications, and we can't fix them because we've got no parts, because we weren't, you know, expecting to do this. We didn't go get spare parts. And we're going to have antimatter for a few trips. And give us a really like niche, small story about the characters, about a new threat, go from Grand Galactic, because we want to know about the characters. If you've just thrown away all the canon of Star Trek, all you've got is these pretty poor characters. Well, now we can make them amazing. So focus on them and give us a few small stories, because the Discovery is not a powerful ship. And 1,000 years in the future, its technology is so far antiquated, it wouldn't even be able to defeat a shuttle of that time. You know, a work bee could destroy it.
That's why I'm worried. That's why I'm worried it might be Mad Max in space. That way they have a fighting chance. If everything's old and decrepit anyway.
The Beta Quadrant, that's fine, though. Because who cares? The Beta Quadrant. I mean, no offense to them, but don't mess up the Alpha Quadrant is what I'm trying to say. Because that actually matters, you know?
I mean, it does. But, I mean, if they do have some jumps left, what's stopping them from jumping back to the heart of the Federation? Oh, we're in the future. Let's go check on home. What's home look like in the future? Oh, fuck. It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And then they have to – and then maybe it won't be there. And then they'll have to, like, go back in time far enough so they can make the Federation still exist in the future. Then their job will be done. And then they'll send Michelle Yeoh back so the Section 31 show can happen.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Unless the Federation's all intact and the Section 31 show takes place in the far future. But – I don't know.
I have not had enough time to speculate. I just watched it like 2 days ago, so I don't know.
I mean, I assume the big part of using Michelle Yeoh is that it's in Discovery era, so we get to reuse all the costumes and stuff and not waste the budget. So, you know, if they say in the future she's not a strong enough actress or a character to lead a show, she just isn't, especially since they neutered the character. You know, a space Nazi is at least a powerful plot device. What is she if she's not the Mirror Universe space Nazi? She's just a person. There's nothing particularly intriguing about that. So if it's not in the present, then it's not even Section 31 show, is it really? You know?
Yeah, what I think is interesting about her character is that you kind of want to root for her to become a good person, and then you kind of see her be a good person, but then once she does achieve that, we're not going to be interested in her anymore.
Oh, she'll always kill in cold blood. We know she'll always kill. We've seen this. She killed Lenin in cold blood. She'll always kill in cold blood. It's all right. She's always got a bit of that left.
Just, as long as she holds on to that duality, you know, we can all maintain, you know, interest. But if she gets too one way or the other, I think we'll just all lose interest. Or at least I would.
Yeah. Well, she actually grew on me. I didn't like the character from the get-go. Even Captain Georgiou, I just didn't like her. But there were moments at the end there where they kind of made me like her, and I hate myself for that. I feel dirty.
I think it's probably part of her, whenever she seems to be kind of human, is when you really like her. Like, when she sacrifices herself for Michael, that was really good. And then she makes these jokes that are just like, who knew you had a sense of humor? Like,
Well, I mean, like, I think one of the strong standout things for the last episode, as far as for character moments go, is like Nan and Georgiou are a great team. They start saying dirty jokes to each other, and I'm like, wow, where's this Nan from earlier?
I want
Dick Joke Nan. Where's she been all season?
And this is why we kind of encourage them to embrace the non-Star Trek-ness even further. Like, don't try and be Star Trek. You're not very good at it. Just do your own thing. Seriously. I mean, you know.
Oh, man. But do you guys think that it's going to be a bleak future, or do you think it'll be just Federation 1,000 years in the future?
I think it's going to be bleak. I think it's going to be like Andromeda. You know, the Commonwealth is gone, so it's up to them to kind of...
Oh, so Michael gets to save and start a new Federation.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, because it's the Michael Burnham show. God damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Exactly.
That's what I have a feeling. I don't know.
I mean, she was she was allowed to live because of a time traveling mother. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Legends of Tomorrow, but she's a time anomaly, you know, by her very definition. So she's a miracle child anyway.
Where's the USS Relativity? Why can't they go and just set this right? They could have set season one right. They could have set season two right.
They really long coffee break.
They're in the they're in the real timeline.
In the real time. Where's Agent Daniels? Where's him?
He's also he's in the Enterprise timeline, which I guess they are in as well. So, because Enterprise isn't really, don't get me started on that.
Much better than Discovery.
But still,
yes.
There's all these time people watching the timeline. Why haven't they been mentioned? Why haven't they made a cameo? The writers probably don't know about them, do they?
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
It's a show in its own context, because you're right. As soon as Michael Burnham's mum does one thing, Relativity's going to warp in and be like, excuse me, you're about 600 years early of having an unlimited time suit. That's why I hoped that Michael Burnham's mum was from the future, and she brought tech from the future of the time suit, which allows them then to do the time suit early to stop control. That would have explained so much, and that allowed tech to be disseminated slightly quicker and all this stuff. It was a paradoxy thing. It would have answered so many questions, because she was given tech to Federation for maybe 30 years before that. There you go. That's why everything's different, because the control thing happened, because they had to change things. It's this new universe where it happens because of that, and it's like, because I didn't buy it for a second. Pre-TOS can make a time suit like that. Oh,
with infinite storage. Data didn't even have infinite storage, and he was built by Soong.
And an EMP that can take out an entire planet, even though the person on the helm says it's a power signature of unimaginable power that we've never seen before, that apparently something built 10 years ago can do.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, it does utilize a time crystal, which nobody really sees.
But the time crystal isn't powered. It has to have a separate power source. That's why the whole thing was they couldn't use the time crystal more than once, even though they used it 6 times.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just talking about, like, I mean,
but it's weird you can design a suit that has unlimited potential around a crystal that you can't get hold of until the point you can get hold of it, then it just runs. So if no one knew about the crystal, how could you build a suit around the crystal? So, I mean, if she came from the future, she'd know about the crystal. There's all these... so easy to fix.
So many ways. I can't wait to hear about and see your 14-episode treatment, Samuel, because it's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. You know,
it would keep all the important stuff, though. That's the point. It would still be the heart and the soul of the season, just... actually thought through, because they clearly didn't think it all through, slash they had to radically change it at the end. Well, so they
can't think it through when they change showrunners after 5 episodes and probably change over half of the writing staff and be like, this is what we're doing now. You can't do it under those kind of conditions, which is a shame.
That said, all things considered, it's still a decent season of TV.
Yeah,
no, it's not absolutely a decent Star Trek. It's probably like I said before, it's like an average Voyager season. It's like it's fine as a Star Trek season, better than season one, but it's like you should be doing better in 2019 with the most money ever, the best effects ever, the best costumes ever. Like, and you're giving us mid Voyager.
They just don't pay for good writers. All the money goes to everything else. Like, I know Ronald D. Moore is busy with Outlander, but just hire him for an hour or two of his time. Have him fact checked. Like, just have him, like.
But this is the double problem, is that they want to be themselves. So when you had people, because Michael Kuda was on the show for a very brief amount of time and then was let go. If you bring on people who know what they're talking about, but the constriction of the show is, well, we can't do this, and then suddenly as a canon person thinking, well, you don't fit in. The lady who does all the Voyager novels, like, she's meant to be amazingly good at canon, yet lets this stuff go through. So clearly she's ripping her hair out, just accepted that it's parallel, even though they can't say it.
Or she doesn't care.
But that's the whole sell of having her there, you know, and going to canon boot camp. These people are, it's like John Eaves, and he knows canon, but if you're given these 10 initiatives from the people up above, that literally do not allow you to make canon Trek. I mean, you're still being paid to do a job, but you just can't do the job that you should be doing. So if any consultant came on board, it would be head against a brick wall, because if the people above are saying this other thing, I mean, you've still got to... It's like when I do fan films, you know, VFX, if the director really wants something that doesn't make sense, you're like, I mean, at some point, you've got to give them what they're asking for. You just try and meld it as close as possible to what makes sense. At some point, they're paying the bills. You know,
yeah. There's only so much you can do when your hands are tied by the up aboves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why fan films are really amazing, because they are. While the quality is obviously all over the place, the fanness, it's more true a Trek than you're going to get with modern Trek, because there's no licensing issues, there's no whatever issues. It's if you can afford it, you can do it. Yeah. That's it. That's all the fan film thing is.
Oh, so Samuel, since you're in the fan film scene, probably more than any of the rest of us,
slightly,
yeah, just slightly. Are people still following that 15-minute guideline, or are they kind of like, f that?
Well,
how has that been working going forward? Because it sounds like
there's been a couple that have done it. There's been a couple that haven't. Been more that haven't, and everyone I'm working on isn't. But that's whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just the guideline. I mean, because the guidelines just seem like a death knell. Like it was like they're trying to kill fan films, because 15 minutes just doesn't seem like a lot of time to tell a Star Trek story.
I don't know what you guys are referencing, by the way.
Well,
I have no idea.
The worst guideline for me wasn't the 15-minute thing. It was more the. The characters can't carry over into other, you know, but I think that one is one that's also been kind of sidestepped a little bit.
Well, I mean that, oh, okay. So Holly, was it right before Discovery came out? So like a year and a half, 2 years ago, after Alec Peters made way too much money with Axanar and gave us nothing but the 20-minute prelude. This is just the quick recap, basically that CBS came after them with a lawsuit, and during this time, during the lawsuit, they came up with a set of rules for fan films so that...
Not guidelines? Not legally enforceable. Yep.
And they're guidelines, they're not rules.
Very careful not to say rule, because a rule is enforceable.
Oh.
You know, whereas a guideline is up to the discretion of the company, and guess what? Not a single... fan film since in 2 years, despite all of them going against several guidelines, not a single one has been approached. Not a single one. So what does that tell you about their stance? It was really just to take the big dogs out, but I mean, at the end of the day, do they have better things to do than to come after a guy that's made, you know, made a $400, 33-minute fan film that no one would think is even good? Is it really worth any lawyer's time? You know, they haven't come after a single one. I mean, that's why I say when Temper Omni came out and I got the deal, is that you might think CBS is harsh taskmaster, but 99.99% of fan films that have been started have come out without interference. 99.9%.
The guidelines.
Every single one after the guidelines. So their track record is pretty much 100%. So the scare tactic there is, I mean, they have proven they will let them through. So what are you
lying about? The guidelines are there just so that they can step in and go, okay,
yeah,
we've broken it. This, now we have some kind of leverage. I mean, the chances of them stepping in are minimal. It's like a jaywalking charge. Yeah. You know, a cop doesn't have to fine you, but he can, you know, you jaywalked back there. Oh, by the way, you look at all these drugs on you. You know, you got another reason for pulling you over or whatever, right? So it's kind of like that.
I mean, and also just keeps us all in the smaller lane. But I mean, the fact is, none of us in the sort of mid level. I mean, if we had 50 grand and you can earn 100 grand by Indiegogo, if you can raise it, that's the limit for 2 50-minute parts. I mean, 100 grand, I mean, I could do something absolutely incredible, but I would never even try and make a 100 grand film because I wouldn't want to try and make it. You know, I'm happy with 5, 10, you know. So it's still allows for a lot. Just takes out the millions or the hundred thousands even.
Yeah, and I mean, I when I saw guidelines, to me, the rules and guidelines were synonyms.
So that's the legal distinction they had. They're very, very careful about that.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't aware, and that's why I wanted to get your idea on that, because I am just not, and you being in that world would be able to fill us in a little bit better, because I've been curious about that myself ever since the fan films came out, because it sounded like they were just trying to squash them completely.
Well, that was the reaction, but until people started releasing things, I mean, you couldn't know. And like I said, there's been literally dozens of fan films. And I think, you know, you can't buy, most fan films can't spend $500 on a Novos TNG outfit, but the guideline says you've got to wear a licensed costume. Okay, or First Contact. People can't afford that, so straight away they break that guideline.
Yeah.
They can't use Trek music. That's sort of a sub-guideline, but they use that. Boom, they can't, you know. You start breaking it down, it's every fan film has broken something, some intentionally, some without meaning to.
Yeah.
And it's the spirit of the guidelines, you know, it's the don't try and make Hollywood films, don't try and do this and this. But you know, I had perks in my Convergence Indiegogo. You're not allowed to have perks.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing is the biggest crossover event in all fan film history. Yet you're not allowed to have continuing characters, and yet I have six. That's the whole point of the film. And they allowed it for a month. So, yeah. You know, so the proof is in the pudding. It all depends on the other stuff that's involved and the way you do it. And the fact is, fan filmmakers that have stuck after the guidelines are doing it in a different way. They want to do it. They're more professional, but also they want to do it for a bit of budget, but in a very like quality, concise way that's really refreshing. And I work on so many right now that 2019 is such a good year for fan films. And if you're a fan of Trek, some damn good stories coming out that I'm excited for, and I'm helping to make them and spending hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And hours. They'll be great when they're done.
That's great.
Excellent.
Shoot us a list of some of the ones you're working on, and I'd love to check them out once they're out. I want to thank you guys for coming on and joining us for this like kind of season one, two comparison for Star Trek Discovery. You guys are Trek yards, and I'm sure people listening have heard of you. But in case someone has not, where can they find you guys online? Where do you guys want to be pestered?
The easiest thing is to just look us up on YouTube. It's Trek yards, all one word. Hit subscribe, and we do weekly content, sometimes daily content. We're always putting out really great stuff, and it's going to be coming up on 5 years in October. So there's a lot of backlog to catch up on if you guys are interested in the ships and tech of Star Trek, and then, you know, fair, honest reviews.
Yeah, they do fantastic stuff on their YouTube channel. I found them randomly. I think the first video I watched was like your D7 saucer separation type video. I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that was a thing. I love that, and that's kind of where I started with you guys, and I love you guys, and I watch you off and on ever since. Less during Discovery, but I definitely plan on getting back and getting your backlog and thoughts now that Discovery's over.
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google Trek Yards, I mean, we're very, very easily Googleable.
Yeah,
forums.
You guys have at least one group on Facebook, right, for Trek Yards?
Oh, yes. We have the main Trek Yards Facebook page, which, again, has a great community. Lots of great posts every day talking about ships and tech. We also have the Star Trek Online Team Trek Yards fleet, if you want to join us on Star Trek Online. We also have a Star Trek Yards modeling group for building models, physical models, which I do. I'm a physical model builder, so people can go on there and share their builds and all that. And of course, we also have Fleet Yards, which breaks the Star Trek mold and goes into all the other sci-fi ships and stuff as well. So Fleet Yards is also on Facebook and YouTube. So,
and they also have a Patreon. You can also support them that way as well.
Yeah, all the links are in the description of all of our videos. We got a cool Teespring store. You can pick up some really cool Trek Yards merchandise and support the show either via Patreon or just joining us for our lives. We do lives every week, and we love interacting with our community. We've got a great community. So, you know, super chats or Patreon, whatever, however you want to support the channel, there's many, many different ways.
So we want to keep doing the show, and that's the only way to do it. And there's so much new Trek coming out, possibly good. Hopefully great. We're excited to see.
Yeah, there's so much Star Trek to cover. And, you know, hopefully going forward, like after each season, I want to have you guys on because I always love our post-season discussions. So like, after each new season, I'd love to like, do crossovers with you guys as well. Those are a lot of fun.
I do want to ask, though, before we go, though, as sort of a closing summary because it makes sense for you both, then what do you think of the two seasons side by side then? Which is better? Why? Because that's sort of the summary, isn't it?
Yeah. For me, I kind of want to say I like season one better in the macro sense. Like looking at it like far away, because it sort of had a cohesive storyline, even though it was a bait and switch storyline from what they said it was going to be. It's more cohesive. It feels like it's the episodes more kind of run together, a little bit less stop and go. Although on the micro level, season two is better because they were fixing things on this. Like the Klingons look more like Klingons. The ships look better. The lighting is better. They did some really nice things on the micro level. But for me, the stop and start, I didn't like the story. Didn't feel smooth. So I'm a continuous story guy. I love Deep Space Nine for its continuous story. So I think I have to give it to season one.
I say season two. I like that we got to see character development and we get to see multiple places in season two. So they traveled to different, you know, different worlds. And especially with like, you know, some of the flashbacks, we got to see childhoods and I enjoyed that. So I think short and sweet answer is just that there was a little more for me to grab onto with season two.
Mm-hmm. And what about you two?
Samuel, go ahead.
Ah, me. Yeah, I mean, they're so different, aren't they? That's the problem. They're kind of mid rebooted, but not quite far enough. I think the first half of season two is the best of all. If you take them as like four halves, the first half of season two is the best. Then the second half of season one is the second best, then the last half of season two is the third best, and the first half of season one is the fourth, which is just the worst. So they're different in different ways. The mirror stuff's pretty good, but so is the intro stuff, but the payoff, the major story arcs are both bad. So I think that's kind of a fair way of looking at it, because they each, like, some episodes are really, you know, better. Like the Mud one just by itself is one of the best, if not the best, of all of them. It's probably season two, but the end story is so disappointing. When you watch the end, it's just not worth the payoff. It's so easy to fix.
I'd have to go with season two as well, but I do like the mirror universe aspects from season one. I kind of like the order that Samuel put them in, breaking them into four. I think that's basically covers it. So
yeah, it's kind of actually four storylines if you really break it down. Way it kind of goes around.
Yeah, and the worst one is the Klingon War.
I mean, I definitely agree that the first five episodes of season two were the best, but the way it pays off in the end, I just can't give it to season two because season two just falls apart so much by the end. I'm just like, no, can't do it. But yeah, the first five episodes, brilliant. The best Discovery has given us so far, by far.
And the fact that Spock has done pretty damn well is the best part of the show so far. They didn't hurt Spock. I mean, some people say because he's basically now just relies on Burnham for all of his emotional morals and as a centre, but it's like, get over it, whatever, who cares, not really. But the performance was really good.
Yeah, Ethan Peck was amazing.
Peck was fantastic. Absolutely. All right. So season one, season two wrap up. Well, for closing out the show, you can find our show online at syntholics.com. You can also find us all over iTunes or you can find your podcast. You can tweet at us online at shows at Syntholic Duo. I'm personally at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And we also have our own Patreon. That's patreon.com/syntholics. You can help out the show that way. And share it with your friends. That also helps. And check out Trek Yard. And check out Trek Yards. They do fantastic content. Like they said, they do sometimes daily content during the week. And it is phenomenal. It's well done. And it's usually extremely fascinating. And they might make you hate Star Trek.
Because that's not a good thing.
No. I kid. But their ideas and theories are great. I would love to see them come to fruition. And yeah, I'd love to see them be consultants for CBS because they've got great ideas and they do great stuff. So thank you guys so much for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you, Holly, for joining us. And thank you all up there for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Woohoo! Thank you. Thank you, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Who's knocking stuff over?
Well, that's not me. My wife upstairs.
Oh, gotcha.
Sorry.
Oh, no, that's good. I'll just edit those parts out. It's good.
Cool.
Ooh. I'm glad you guys didn't hear my dog. She's been sitting next to me trying to get me to play with her the whole time. Because, like, I'm, like, talking, so I think she thinks I'm talking to her. So every time I would speak, she would, like, put her hands on my lap, like, hey, what?
Yeah.
Hello there. Hello there.
Well.
Yeah, basically. Well, it was nice talking to you. We're all talking from different parts of the world, aren't we?
Yeah, yes. I'm in Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
Obviously in England, north of London.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Buffalo, New York, and Holly's out in San Diego, California.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very
nice. We are all over the place.
Holly used to be in our neck of the woods.
Yes.
Yes, I did. And damn it, Stuart, we need to hang out. You're like only like 2 hours away. We've known each other for over a year now. We need to like figure this out.
I know, right? I think I got to try some of your drinks for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I think campfire or something.
It'd probably be easier for you guys to come this way because I don't think I can bring that much booze across the border.
Well, I don't think you'd be able to either. Yeah, but me and Sylvia will make a trip out sometime. Or next time Samuel's down, we'll drive down and hang out with you guys.
Oh, hell, that'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic. If we do some like live videos, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crossover.
Absolutely.